Much and more, said the overseer. Nurse said you would be rewarded if you pleased her father, did he not? Though the noble Yezin is loath to lose his little treasures, have you seen? Yurkaz Zo Yodenzak persuaded him that it would be selfish to keep such droll antics to himself. Rejoice! To celebrate the signing of the peace, you shall have the honor of jousting in the great pit of Daznak. Thousands will come to see you, tens of thousands, and oh, how we shall laugh! Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it was best to rename and rebrand ourselves as the game did so with a second edition. Now, we are the White Book Podcast, and each week we bring you your dose of strategy, insight, and all-around geeky goodness. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, but more importantly to you, our listeners. Please consider supporting us on Patreon so that we can continue to make this show the best it can, and I promise we have big plans for the future. This is The White Book.
Uh-huh. That's intense.
Yeah. Whew. Man, Aaron's fake laughter was as good as my fake enthusiasm.
For, say, a restricted list?
Hey!
Hey-o.
Man, Aaron is just jumping right into it this week.
He's feeling himself.
I like it. Before we get there, though, let me at least throw out there that I did a Patreon drawing again. We still got a few magnets to get rid of, so to speak, to give out, I should say.
That makes
sense. Yeah. The magnet winner this week is Reed. So, Reed W wins. Ooh. Again.
What name is that?
Reed W came over to us from Netrunner.
Oh, yeah. Reed's cool.
Welcome, yeah. Netrunner person. Welcome.
Okay. Now,
welcome
now
to
we
the only game know, that matters.
The only fact that's worse than Netrunners. Come on, guys. That's a pro transition.
Oh. Gotcha. FAQ fact. Gotcha. Sorry, I thought you said like fact, FACT, and totally threw me off.
FAQ fact. Which has five new restricted cards. Will, you have it open. Can you read them to us?
We have Flea Bottom, The Wars to Come, Breaking Ties, Mace Tyrell, and The Hightower.
Wow. Rip my Gen Con deck.
I mean,
yeah.
Summer me is really happy. Fall me is really disappointed.
Yeah. What was the... I forget now who I saw comment this online, but somebody said
CT.
It looks like this was drafted in June.
It's about 4 months old, for sure.
Yeah. It would have been great then.
I mean, it would have been a start then. And it's not
I mean, a start.
It's a false start now.
I mean, I think it's still a little bit of a start. Like, I still wanted Flea Bottom and Breaking Ties split up. I think that's just healthier for the game. The combination there really borked their ability to actually properly utilize loyal on
you say that?
Characters.
You say that until you realize just how much degenerate shit was being kept in by Flea Bottom and Breaking Ties.
Oh, there's a lot. There's a lot. I'm
because
I'm,
all this did was make a bunch of new degenerate shit be like easily T1.
I mean, like, isn't that just always the case? Anytime you update like a restricted list, though, isn't it just a different batch of stuff that becomes T1 very quickly?
If you just didn't restrict Breaking Ties, you still keep what's the stoop free folk in check, you still keep Randall in check, like, and they've only got like 50 new damn Randall triggers lately. You still keep Great John and Fast Eddie in check. Like, you don't bring back Vic to what are already the stickiest boards in the game, thanks to Vince's card. Like, the second you unrestrict breaking ties, second you restrict breaking ties, you're basically saying, like, welcome back to Degeneracy, don't even worry about loyal.
I think, to go to Aaron's point, I mean, you just need, I think it's what this did. So let's talk about the good things I think that this restricted list did. I think it accomplished some of the goals. If Danny's goal was to break up the Tyrell decks that dominated the meta from roughly the end of Combo Winter in February to Gen Con, he did a successful job. Mace decks, I think, still exist. I don't think necessarily Mace will be solved in time for Worlds, but definitely in that sort of pit that we have between the release of the Greyjoy box and the beginning of new cards, people will figure out how to make Mace work. Spoiler, I think it involves the summer agenda and running as many copies of Trade Routes as you possibly can. But it's going to take a while to figure out what the most efficient thing is. So Mace decks are dead for now. Which is a huge boon to a lot of people. Flea Bottom is harder to run. Breaking Ties is harder to run. So that Breaking Ties Flea Bottom combo, particularly out of like Targaryen, out of Stark, that many people, if you look at the social media feeds for our game, have been complaining about. So I think that definitely in some levels this accomplished things and things that definitely the community has been asking for. On the other hand, I do agree with Aaron that, and I think I said this on Facebook, people are going to be asking for Breaking Ties back in a little bit, because one of the good things, like, I think Breaking Ties did a lot of bad things for the game, and that's sort of what Danny hit here. At the same time, what it did do is it made non-loyal characters less sticky, and so that particularly means non-loyal Renown, Randall, Fast Eddie, Victarion, and there's probably other characters. The non-loyal Asha, like just like challenge-based non-loyal characters. Brienne, the short Brienne, the five-cost Brienne.
Brienne.
They're just great much job. Less sticky. Great John. Like, they're much less sticky. This means that mid-range and rush decks can't just stick these really powerful under-costed characters, giving both control decks in the form of Martell and other mid-range decks out of factions like, again, Martell, but also Greyjoy, options to answer these big mid-range threats. But those are gone now from the meta. And resets that are currently in the format are not strong enough to hold these mid-range threats in check. So the fact that one of the major tools there has been removed, I think we're going to see a very rush-heavy fall.
Go ahead. It's not just that it's removed. It's that it's removed without touching the other two obvious plots that have to be removed with it. Because if you're going to remove Breaking Ties, you also have to remove King in the North and Heads on Spikes. You have to. Like, to say that you're removing Breaking Ties and not the other two is basically saying, just go as fast as you want. And here, if you need that lock turn, it's right there for you. Like, it locks decks out of the meta in a way that's very unhelpful.
Definitely true. And Free Folk, of course, is the other major thing. Of course, it does bring things like Brotherhood back into the meta. So I think, though, the problem was, I feel like Free Folk was designed within a Breaking Ties world and was signed off on in a Breaking Ties world by Danny. And it's like, this is a card I can put in because there's this easy answer available to every faction for all the good wildling characters, all the good neutral characters. And that's gone now. And that just means that these like aggro decks running Free Folk can really run rampant. And I would expect to see a lot of it, but.
I mean, in some ways, though, like, it's kind of internally consistent with what we've seen in Danny's design, right? Like, interview for 350 aside, I would argue that the game has only gotten faster and faster since he took over as lead designer, and that, you know, a large chunk of that is not just players kind of figuring things out and tinkering with the meta. I think a large chunk of that are the cards that have been added to the pool. Your plazas, your marines, your, you know, high towers and maces and so on that, you know, make it look like his design style is for games to be faster and faster. So to some extent, I almost kind of expect this update to encourage faster decks because that's just kind of par for the course.
Fair.
Not saying it's so good, but
with this restricted list, what percent of the field do we think Targ is at? Over under 50.
Well, over under 50?
Mm-hmm. Terrell was basically
under 50.
Yeah.
Terrell was basically 50 at Gen Con.
Yeah, at Gen Con, but I think
it was over, wasn't it? Like 55? I forget exactly now.
I think
look this up. Give me a second.
I think Targ, especially with Europeans coming, is at about 50%. I would take under if I had to, because it won't be over 50 by much if it is. But like I think it's easily over 40 and would definitely take that bet.
I think Targ's
untouchedness by this and the removal of Targ predators is hard to overstate. Like, how much of an impact is Dario?
I still think, like,
hold on. Can I just say one second, real quick?
Yeah.
To go to Aaron's statistics.
Okay.
Wars was 60% of the meta, but Tyrell was only 27 at Gen
Con. Okay. 27%. Okay. There we go.
All right. That's a number I think Targaryen will be at Worlds. 27 seems about right. 25 to 27.
I think that's much more reasonable, especially when you've still got Stark running strong at the top there. And this, you know, it dings them a little bit on the flea bottom front like anybody else. But
guys, they're big hit.
Greyjoy, though, is getting all these new tools. So.
Well, not before Worlds.
At Worlds, like, we got two more new tools, and we have a big seven cost, seven strength character that just got like the card he wanted more than anything.
Sure.
And solves a lot of Greyjoy's problems.
I still don't think they can beat Targ. I think what makes Targ so good is that Targ just cheats everything it wants into play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that Targ's
good. They don't Targ's care five about costers either economy at this point, right? Economy of gold or draw.
Yeah, no, they have everything they want. Like, and they can just straight up put things into play, right? Like, it's absurd.
But do you know what faction the restricted list helps the most? Is Lannister.
Mm.
I think that they clan kitchen table clans
bottom game. So now,
yeah,
now that's not as much of a drawback.
And Harrenhal is much safer. Mm-hmm. The Tyrion is much safer. Jaime is much safer. All the various clansmen tools that you have are much safer.
You're missing a point here, though. Well, you're missing 2 points. One, clansmen is bad. Two,
yes,
clansmen is really slow and needs to get set up. And like, if the meta is rush, clansmen just sits there being sad. Like, and king plots just like, what do you do? Like, you just sit there with clansmen with your thumb in your ass, going, I have all these cool effects.
You run Tommen.
Okay, that's a wonderful answer in a Targ meta.
It's got two strength, not one.
It's just
right.
Yeah, I think if you add five cards to your restricted list, you have something that actually balances the game, and it boggles my mind that like that heads and king plot aren't on there. And that they didn't touch Wyman, and that they didn't touch at least two of Targ's four major fun.
Yeah, I really think that like we have a large enough pool now, and there's so many factions in the game that if you're going to start in on some kind of like shake up, balancing factor type of restricted list rather than just like anti combo or something, then I think you just have to include more factions to spread it out and make it like real choices. I mean, it seems kind of silly to me. Maybe it's just first ed perspective looking at things, but that we've hit this point and there's only, you know, three houses and neutral on the list here represented.
And Lannisters spread that out. Are just dumb. Like, Lannister's not really out there.
Yeah.
Like, it's completely absurd that we're still at this point. Like, at five more cards, I thought was the bare minimum. Like, I wanted more, but like, with five more cards, four more cards, no, probably has to be five. With five more cards, I think this restricted list works. As a five card restricted list, I think it's absolutely, like, I'd rather have nothing but hope, because they solved literally nothing that was a problem and instead created a bunch of new problems.
So now that sort of Glazer has laid out sort of this doom and gloom scenario, I'm like, I think we need to get to the heart of the matter, which is sort of like where we project the meta going. And so I think what this restricted list is going to do is it's going to bring into the front of the rush will continue to be overheated. And the main way in which people are going to try to answer rush is going to be aggro. And so I expect to see Free Folk. I expect to see Brotherhood. I expect to see of Burn coming in to target these rush decks, and the rush decks attempting to go under them. And so we're going to have this kind of deadly dance between those two archetypes, with maybe control possibly having a couple of hooks in there. Maybe icon-based control in particular, but I think overall we're going to just see a really overheated rush-based meta that is barely kept into check by the presence of Free Folk and other aggro decks in the
format. I mean, and even those aggro decks, like, when you're kind of, I don't know, playing out the speed of the meta and, like, how the games play out, how many turns they take, like the number of actually effective choices that are made over the course of the game, like if it's all super rush and super aggro, it's effectively the same, right? Because those aggro decks are just trying to completely obliterate the rush deck so that they're not, you know, in it anymore. And then it's a pretty fast mop up. So,
I mean, theoretically, a slower deck that can have its board go down to zero can have an opportunity to come back against aggro. But mid-range certainly will be blown out by its inability to keep up with rush and its inability to survive the aggro pressure.
Hey, remember control?
So,
remember control? That,
I mean, control
doesn't exist.
If aggro can overtake rush,
but okay,
control has a chance.
It does.
But I'm just saying, that's what my argument would be. Like, I don't necessarily think that. I think it just becomes rush is the center of gravity. But if aggro gets so good, and it may get so good after Sea of Blood, then control has an opening. But if it's rush that is the center of gravity, no, control's pretty doomed. Maybe icon-based control with Martell, but that's,
I don't,
like,
think so. I think
you got to see all your pieces.
I mean, I don't think it can survive King Blot.
Yeah.
That's like, true. I think that's what crushes rush. What, like, control can answer rush if King Plot's restricted. All right. Ready to move on, I guess?
I mean, there are at least a couple other things that are worth pointing out in the FAQ. We did get some other card errata and rules updates. We don't necessarily have to go into super detail there. But there are a couple interesting things of note, I think. One is Balin Greyjoy from Kings of the Isles got an errata, which I think in second edition is the first time we've got a card errata before its release, right?
Yes, definitely the first time. There's only like two errata.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought that was very interesting and seems reasonable to shuffle those cards back into the owner's deck so he doesn't just keep picking that out. A little clarity on saving from cost is pretty straightforward, I think. So if a card would leave play as part of the cost of initiating the ability, that card cannot be saved. So that saves us from some awkward interactions with Vince's champ card, right? And the last one, I legitimately have no idea why this like rose to the level of importance to be added. Can anyone tell me why this entry was added? Multiple copies of the same agenda. A player cannot run more than one copy of each different agenda by title, even in situations where they are allowed to run multiple agendas. So, I mean, I can't...
Someone wanted a Baratheon,
Alliance, Banner of the Stag, Banner of the Stag, but...
Alliance Double Cobra is what people were, I'm assuming, doing. I'm not totally sure why.
Okay, so that you could... Yeah, so you could stack their triggers then, I suppose?
I don't think so, because you have to...
I mean, it's a reaction to claim.
Yeah. You can stack two attachments as your reaction to claim, right? And get two things.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, basically stacking the triggers, just maybe not sequentially.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
I don't know. Shrug.
I mean, it's a thing. I guess I hadn't really seen that really blowing up the competitive world. So I don't necessarily know if that ingenuity needed nipped in the bud, but it was.
That's sad.
There's other updates. We just don't care about them, like Tycho and Henchmen and stuff that are just the way everyone's been playing them forever anyway.
Yeah. Those are actual frequently asked questions. It's just them literally answering those questions. So There we go. That's the update.
Man, I would trade our restricted list for the melee one in a second.
Yeah, I'm still very confused kind of about... I really sort of feel like the melee restricted list and the joust restricted list kind of have two different missions. And actually, at this point, I don't know if the melee restricted list has a mission anymore. I would have expected some kind of nod or like a, hey, you know, we don't feel there needs to be an update to the melee list at this time in the article, but oh well. How about we go ahead and take a look at our chapter pack for the week or the month, as it may be. We get to kick on over here to In Daznak's Pit. So this is what our next to last, our penultimate
second pack. Last, yep.
Yep. In this cycle before the drought hits. And we could see Shadows tinkered around with a little bit more. For listeners that happen to be jumping in now, we go ahead and rate these cards based on a scale akin to the U.S. grading system. So A's through F's, which progressively get worse as you go, A's being the best. But we have added a couple specialty ratings since then. S are just amazingly unbelievable. Good, and E's are kind of sideboard cards or very, very niche cards that may potentially build into something. But
yeah. Will, you had something really wrong. You didn't call E ratings what they are. They're the James Wamsley Memorial Rating for longtime listenership of reviewers dodging.
Oh, that's a great one. I actually sort of want to make like a trophy now, the James Wamsley Memorial, so on and so forth, and mail that to him.
Well, you know, if you get it done for Worlds, we can give it
that would be perfect. That would be perfect. All right. Well, we'll table that thought. We'll see what happens.
On the plus side, that dude doesn't have a card design yet.
Yet.
Let's talk some cards.
Yet. All right, let's see if we all can right. make our best time.
Nico's winning Worlds, not Wama. So it's fine. Nico doesn't lose tournament.
So who wants to start with the overcurve star
cards? I'll do the overcurve star cards.
Okay.
For some reason, Bear Island Scout is a loyal Stark character. 2 cost, 1 strength, military power icons, House Mormont. Reaction: after you marshal Barrel and Scout, if each character you control has the Stark affiliation, search your deck for a House Mormont card. Card, not character. Reveal it, add it to your hand. Shuffle your deck. And Skagos. Non-loyal Stark location. Cost 2. The North. Shadow 1. For no reason. Kneel Skagos and sacrifice a standing Stark card to search your deck for a card with the same title as a sacrifice card and put it into play. Shuffle your deck. Barrel and Scout is amazingly, amazingly stupid. Like, why not let Stark dupe and trip a couple of renowned characters basically whenever they want and get out two or three chuds whenever they want because they can search for themselves. Like, it card is silly good. Good thing Breaking Ties is restricted because holy crap, this with Breaking Ties is absurd.
Well, it is a martial trigger.
Sure, but it's just like you could play it. You've got its trigger, and then you could just break and ties it because it's a shitty chud. I think this card is unbelievably phenomenal, and any whining Stark players are doing right now about losing anything else needs to be taken into account that they just got Barrel and Scout. By the way, once you've got Mage out and you win a challenge with Barrel and Scout and whoever the hell else, you get to look at the top card of your deck for that stupid chud trigger for extra draw and start. I'm not sure Skagos is good. If it's good, it's a one of. A lot of people seem to be crazy about it. The only thing I really like it for is a thing that Stark doesn't do. The chain Ramsey trigger sounds completely amazing to me. But
it's non-loyal too.
Yeah, but like
so.
And Martell with my like six Stark characters, I'm clearly not running it. But chaining Ramsey triggers is amazing. Besides that, it's mostly attachment control and a way to get a mirror back into shadows. For those things, it's fine. It's not super amazing, but it's totally fine. I can see a one of in some decks, but people going crazy about it, I think, are just going Shago crazy. And this is the dumbest shadow card of all the shadows.
Dumbest.
I don't think it beats Selyse in its like uselessness as a shadow.
No, Selyse can at least surprise in the middle of a challenge.
That's Selyse. It's
the daughter.
Oh my god, what's
Shireen? Shireen. But no, Shireen, you can at least surprise in the middle of a challenge. Like right, like they just power challenge you with one chump, assuming you have no power icons. You're like, screw you, you're done. Like that's reasonable.
Yeah, maybe.
Like as a surprise, what are you surprise sacrificing?
Yeah.
Like they military you. You get rid of your Rob to get another Rob and be like, aha, standing my board.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty edge case. Like, and the character has to be standing, so you're not even getting like a surprise action advantage out of it. Like, this is like, I'm gonna go ahead and say this now before we're even done
with
this pack or this cycle. Danny seems like a great guy. I don't think he either. A likes shadows personally, or B doesn't really understand it, like from a way to do interesting things with it. I think it's got to be one or the other, like deliberate or accidental.
So I actually think it's neither of them. Actually, Will, I think it's the decision to make shadows an any phase action made them really conservative. Right, because you can't. So all of the data they had about how shadows worked came from first edition when it was a framework action, and that strongly limits the design space. And you saw Mirror Read in first edition, which was the only card that broke, one of the few cards at least that broke the shadows framework action, and it was the most busted OP
and
card
barely got dialed
in 1.0 for a long time, or at least one of them.
Yeah, she got both.
Wildly ahead and above. But the thing is, like, she's a shadows card that is really, really good and uses shadows. Like, I could understand if they were worried about it and she costs like 2 more gold to bring out of shadows or something. Like, that's overcosting to like overcompensate. So many of these shadows cards just don't actually work with shadows. Like, they have it printed on them, but it doesn't effectively do anything. and I don't know. I don't like it.
Like Bear Island Scout could have so easily been a Shadow Striker.
Yeah, yeah, and it makes sense for a scout, you know, sneaking like, around, seeing
I mean,
there and popping out.
Yeah,
yeah, but then any return to Shadow's effect becomes.
You mean like any return to hand effect, like for Snow of Winter or Iron Bank or whatever? Like it's the same idea.
Yeah.
There's more ways to return to hand to return to Shadow.
And there's bound to be more total triggers over the life of the game that you can redo by returning to hand than you could ever redo by returning to Shadows.
Yeah.
That's true.
I don't know. Either way, I'm going to give Stark an A because I think Skagos is like a B minus and Barrel and Scouts an S. I think that card is freaking unreal. And Stark players should strongly be looking at running many dupes of their.
I mean, they're Mormon characters, which are pretty few and far between if I did the search right here, though. It's Bear Island Host, Bear Island Scout, and Mage Mormon?
Yeah. I mean, no, Daisy. Daisy. You get Mage and Daisy. Good.
Okay. Something must be up with the search, then, that Daisy didn't come up in the search.
Daisy is very good to fetch out with this card, and it does make Mage better. The fact that it's just like this, as Aaron said, right? Like this card, Baron's got plus any other Stark character winning a challenge means you get the draw. The ability to fetch dupes. It's House Mormont card, so it can fetch Bear Island. Hey.
Bear Island. Really?
Okay, there is definitely something wrong with search by trade in the advanced search on Thrones TB then.
But yeah. And any future House of Mormont card until this card rotates, you know, becomes better thanks to this card, right?
Fair Island Loyalist. Woo woo.
Yeah. But I definitely think it's an A card. I don't think it's an S card level there. It's a very powerful effect. I think there's another similar effect later in this pack. Yes, there is. That I think is even more busted than this. So which kind of
I disagree based on the cost. But we'll get there.
But Skagos, I think, is very good because one of the things Aaron and I, and I feel like because basically Aaron and I do these reviews now with you, Will, is Aaron and I have been arguing over the amount of SAC outlets that Stark has access to. And Skagos gives one that has extra utility in the form of attachment control, in the form of getting summer triggers, in the form of Wyman, the form of cat power. Like I think it provides more consistency for that theme, and then particularly in like the mid range theme.
Down on card count.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the ability to just get extra things out of it. I think, particularly like when you know your opponent has Valor Dohaeris rather than Valor Morghulis, it lets you do some kind of fun tricks. And that to get that Wyman trigger, to get that kind of that Catelyn trigger, that and things like that. So I think Skagos is a card that it's not going to be 3x in every Stark deck, but I would not be surprised to see it as a 1x in mid range Stark decks going forward. So I would overall give Stark a B+ in this pack. These are definitely over pushed cards, but it's definitely not the most over pushed we've seen Stark this cycle, which is saying a lot because no other faction except Greyjoy has Tutor at the power Stark does now.
Yeah.
Not even Tyrell that has Tutor.
It's kind of absurd the like level of card advantage that Stark has really picked up lately. From it was really not that long ago, right? It was this summer when we were debating which houses were at the bottom of the pack on draw, and didn't we put Stark down near the bottom? Oh.
Yep. Team Stark for Thrones War kept their chat going, and every time a new Stark draw card comes out, everyone just gets sad.
Well, you know, but Stark for Thrones Toberfest is a little sad about its restricted list. We'll see how Stark ends up being.
Skagos and Baron was out. They could just shut.
We'll see how it plays out.
Oh no, they just have to crazy card event. Well, no, you can't say that. I can't. All right.
Okay. I didn't actually rate him. I'm going to, I think, give Stark an A- out of this. I really like the scout as well, but I don't know. I'll wait and see how Skagos goes, but it's not as versatile as some other stuff, so we'll see. Okay, now we can go to Tyrell.
Who wants Tyrell?
Do you want to do Tyrell?
Sure, I'll jump on it. So first up, we've got the Brightwater Host, which I'm sure you guys are familiar with at this point. He's a 6 cost, 5 strength, military and power icon, army and House Florent traits. No attachments. Reaction after you win a challenge which Brightwater Host is attacking. Choose one card in Shadows and return it to its owner's hand. Then a unique Tyrell character you control gains 2 power. And then we've got Might of the Reach, a loyal Tyrell event for 3. Challenges action, choose a participating character. Until the end of the challenge, that character gets plus 10 strength. I'll just say the host is, I think, again, a pretty huge pushback against Shadows, and one that feels deceptive in that it seems like a pretty huge hit to Shadows, but I just don't think you're going to really see that many cards in Shadows for very long, so... I don't think it sees play. Might of the Reach, I think in a practical sense, probably doesn't see play either unless someone comes up with a silly combo. But the Shaga, my beating Shaga heart just loves seeing an event like this to give one character a super huge boost. I mean, I suppose it could let you maybe get off Frey Hospitality. Which is pretty sweet, but that's also 6 gold in the challenges phase at that point. So it ain't cheap. It ain't cheap. I think Tyrell did not come out.
Sea of Blood.
Well. That's fair. Sea of Blood could be it.
Yeah, Sea of Blood, a Tyrell Sea of Blood Frey Hospitality deck could be something. I think it's a Brienne card. I think that people will come up with Brienne decks that abuse Might of the Reach, excuse me, to stand their character, give her renown, and draw a card.
Yeah, stand another character too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
so
another character strength.
It's,
I mean,
strength,
it'll be
yeah.
Randall.
So, right. Like, I just think that it won't necessarily be maybe only Brienne is the lone win condition, although Might of the Reach does give that Brienne deck a lot more outs against some of its bad matchups, so I wouldn't be surprised to see people experimenting with that. Brightwater Host, I think, is a mediocre anti-Shadows card, but as soon as Tyrell has reasons it wants to return cards in Shadows to hand, it can be kind of busted. So I think actually Brightwater Host will be played in decks that end up returning its own cards to Shadows or from Shadows to your hand to get power.
Brightwater Host? Oh, sorry. My fault. Go ahead.
Brightwater Host. The one we talked about on Suns with Evan.
Yeah. I thought Brightwater Host would be bad because I thought Breaking Ties was a card. But since Breaking Ties is not a card, Brightwater Host is good. If Terrell plays Rush, there's little reason not to play Brightwater Host, assuming they can find the Shadows
card. I mean, they got to find the Shadows card.
Here's another good neutral
point,
Shadows
you're
card.
Paying 6 for a card that itself doesn't have any renown or keywords. Like, it's got to have the Shadows card.
Yeah,
and
you're
target.
You're paying functionally 8, right? You're paying functionally.
Well, and needing the 2 cards.
8 gold for 2 power.
Yeah, yeah.
And a challenge
but like,
win. But
and it's
yeah,
pretty,
I'm okay with that.
It's pretty expensive. Like, I think I might just be wanting to spend that on other unique characters in that case.
Maybe. Terrell just has so much goddamn gold, right? Like,
they do. I mean, power used to be like, so the way in which Tyrell approached things was 15 power just existed in your deck in the form of Mace plus Hightower. You just had to find ways to abuse to get to that 15 power. You didn't have to create it. It was just already sitting in your 60 or 61 card draw deck. That's no longer really the case per se, at least in the foreseeable and a medium term future. So Tyrell players are going to be casting around for that power, and Brightwater Host is one of those options. The question is whether or not it's efficient enough, but the power level of Tyrell got dialed down. That doesn't mean Tyrell is bad. I don't think it's bad. Tyrell Rush is still immediately fantastically good. I think a mid-rangey Tyrell build is also probably pretty solid, if it's not, if it can survive aggro, but they just don't have that 15 power sitting in their draw deck. And so they're going to be looking for other ways to get it. And Brightwater Host gives 2 power, which is a lot. So I wouldn't be surprised for this card to see some play, but I don't think it's going to be flying out of people's binders into sleeves.
I think what these cards do are fairly obvious. Like Brightwater Host, if your deck wants that extra bit of power, speed, like a Tyrell Rush deck, and maybe it runs that, maybe it doesn't. Depends on its economy base, how much crap it's spinning out. It might have the reaches for your Brienne and maybe a Sea of Blood. But Brienne's probably a cohort deck, I'm assuming. So, I don't know. They're both perfectly good. I'm going to give them a C.
Yeah.
C is
what I was thinking.
C plus for me. C plus.
Okay. Yeah, go for it.
So, do you want me to jump into Night's Watch then? Three Finger Hob is a unique 2-cost, 1-strength, loyal, green iconed character for Night's Watch. He is Stuart traded, no attachments except weapon, and he has this reaction. After you check reserve, if your hand size is lower than your reserve value, draw 2 cards. And then we have Hard Home, which is a unique non-loyal 2-cost Shadows location with the North, Shadow 2. Dominance action, kneel and sacrifice Hard Home to choose an opponent. That player sacrifices a standing character. I think both of these cards are role players, like at the B level for their decks. I think we'll start with Hard Home. Hard Home goes into Night's Watch Wolf style attrition decks. It creates redundancy for Mutiny. It creates redundancy for giving your Bay of Seals further outs. It creates targets, even if you're just hitting chuds, it creates targets for your new wall, which particularly early, you don't necessarily have ways to get to, particularly since decks are going to be leaning away from Flea Bottom. Now that it's restricted, you need a so decks are going to be dumping less characters that decks besides Targaryen are going to be dumping less characters into their discard pile. Hard Home gives you further ways to do it. This is a very, very strong role player, like a B+ role player in that deck. Free Finger Hob is like a 1x in non-builders, Night's Watch main faction decks going forward. I don't know if they can find room for him, but I mean, maybe I don't know. I don't have a read
green icon and just like
you just have
it doesn't deal it. Right?
Yeah.
Just like draw 2
around the reserve check. If you're only 1 below reserve, you still draw 2 and Glazer, don't have to discard.
Glazer, starting in November, you and I have been arguing about slots and builders decks, even though you despise builders for a year, and. We've been like back and forth about this. Like, I feel like Wama will say, don't run this card. Sandy will run it and do fine. That's how I think we're going to end up with where Free Fingered Hob is in builders. But I think in like Night's Watch Reigns, Tomas style Night's Watch, Night's Watch Wolf, Night's Watch Winter, they're just all going to run one of Three Finger Hob. And then, of course, it's a further thing for the most broken deck of all time, which, of course, is the Stewart's build, made famous by our fellow White Book alum, Kyle Vansel. So you must always keep your eyes on that deck. As you know, it's the most degenerate. The Steal Your Girl deck, the Ratcook deck. I don't think it makes that deck consistent enough to actually be as bad as Kyle thought it was, but it's definitely one more Stewart. It's a good Stewart that you want to play, that you could play early and cheaply. So it definitely makes the Ratcook deck better. So, yeah, this is, I think, a B plus for Night's
Watch.
What's
Builder's restricted card?
Depends on the build. For some, it'll be Wars to Come if you're doing it Scotty style, probably Flea
More
Bottom.
Breaking Ties, right? Got Flea Bottom, keep PC.
More Breaking Ties. Yeah, Scott loves Breaking Ties, right? Yeah. So,
and Three Finger Hob's definitely there.
Yeah.
loyal.
Yeah. So I think builders is also another deck that survives the restricted list, actually gets stronger thanks to the restricted list. So.
It depends how much Victarion's in the meta.
Yeah.
Lots of Vic, not lots of builders. Also, there's some card coming later, some red and black house that I don't think builders is going to like a lot early in the game.
No, not early in the game, but it can survive because it's, well, we'll get there. I think Hard Home is like stand out the coolest card in the pack. It'll be really frustrating for people to play against, particularly when they have Bay of Seals out. You're not going to want to play against that.
Coolest card in the pack is Arch.
I mean, I do think it's at least cool in that Hard Home seems to be one of the bare handful of cards that might be worthwhile to have there in Shadows to try and surprise somebody. I mean, he needs some other Shadows backup to actually make it a surprise. But, you know, you might be playing Slint, I suppose.
Right.
But I do like, at least theoretically, you could be trying to surprise someone and catch them with their pants up, I guess.
Well, to back you up, Will, like, what you can do is you can have a Hard Home and play one in Shadows, sacrifice it, bring the other one out of Shadows, and get a second character.
Also true.
Like, that's I think, a cool play to do with this. And, of course, I think it's also a card that pushes Night's Watch Wolf a little bit towards looking at King's Landing.
Aaron Hall and this is a good combo.
Yeah. Like, because it gives you, again, additional redundancy of these sacrifice effects that are worth recycling.
Hey, and King's Landing more reliable with this FAQ update.
Yep. So that might be the answer for control. Like, Night's Watch Wolf has traditionally had a pretty good rush matchup. So Ward is good against rush. So, and so is Mutiny.
Only the head of King. A plus.
Mm-hmm. Mutiny still works through the King, though.
Yeah. Hard Home does not, nor does Hub. But I'm giving the house an A+.
That's true.
Cool.
I think it's B+.
I guess I didn't really say. I'm feeling probably a B+ on this house as well. Yep.
I can't imagine Night's Watch deck from now on without Three Finger Hobbit. All right. Storm's End Maester. It's a barrel loyal 2-for-1 power icon Maester. Challenge action. Deal Storm's End Maester to choose an opponent. If you have more power on your faction card than that player, draw one card. I would just like to quickly compare that to Barrowland Scout and then laugh at Barra. Glamour. House Wraithin, non-loyal, 3-cost, item or lore. Character you control only, Shadow 2, terminal. Attached character gets +2 shrink. Action. Kill attached character. Choose a character or dead pile that was killed this phase. Return the chosen character to play. Both these cards are bad. They're bad. I don't want to play either of them. I think these are bad. I'm not sure I'm being clear, but these are bad. I don't like them. I'm going to give them a D and then let you guys talk about them.
Yeah, I think they're mostly relatively failed designs. Glamour feels a little too hedged in, probably in development. It was overpowered. Because it's just like got so many riders on it that I don't know. Like, it doesn't feel like worth paying 3-4 gold for. Storm's End Maester feels like a cycle one card.
It shouldn't need to kneel.
That's definitely true. But then it would need to be unique.
No, or you shouldn't have to have more than one power on your faction. Like, how is draw one card better than search your deck for one card,
yeah,
which is what Baron Scout does at the That's same true. Cost with another.
I think Aaron might be onto something there.
Yeah. I feel like Danny has been incredibly cautious with Barra design. much to the faction's detriment, and this is another example of it. It's a card that actually got worse with Breaking Ties getting restricted, because it gave a Breaking Ties option for
Ties and Flea Bottom
for that fact for Barra.
Finally, Barra was gonna have a chance there to kneel him, draw, sack him to bounce, get him back, draw again, sack again. It would have been glorious.
I mean, that's not a horrible combo.
You can't do it now, so.
You can't.
Can't do it now. I mean, you can't, right?
I mean, you could melee. Yeah.
So, restricted.
So, no.
That's a good thing.
I mean, this is not a horrible card in melee.
No, it's slower than I'd like, but I can probably find an opponent with less power on my house.
Are we really going to talk about melee for 10 minutes right now?
Yeah.
No. I think this is definitely the most D of all the cards. I'm sure Glamour will excite the Shaga players of the world.
Yes.
But it's just, if it was like, I hate in these, but we do it all the time. But like, if it was like kill attach character to choose a character with like lesser printed cost or something that, you know, in the dead pile and bring it into play or something, then it feels maybe a little bit better. So then you have to kill like Robert or King
Stannis
to get a six cost character or something. You can never get Robert. You can never get Stannis. So, or be extremely difficult. You'd have to run like, well, no, I think all the higher characters are all no attachments.
Nightmares
so.
It. Or play the thing that blanks everything, put this on it, and then be like, you have to kill my Rob this turn for me to get him back.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it could be in some kind of like.
Bad. Can we just move on?
Barra or Night's Watch Stag New Wall deck that just uses to kill your opponent's best characters.
I mean,
I don't know.
That sounds hilarious.
To put characters from your dead pile into play.
That sounds
I don't know.
Awesome. Shaga wheels are turning now.
But yeah, this is D. It's actually probably F. Well, Storm Sands Maester, I actually could see some same play in melee, so it's got to stay with the D. But it's like a 60 or 65, depending on like the lowest possible
really?
D.
Really, man, I think I'm higher than that. I mean, partly it's Glamour getting the Shaga juices running for me, and you know, while I've had my issues with other cards, this is another. Look at this, two in a row that does have some applicable ability to come out of shadows and actually surprise somebody here. So there's a bit of use to having that. So that's definitely something. And the other one I think is still, you know, not actively bad draw. It's not super efficient, especially looking at what some of the other houses have gotten. But I've definitely seen stuff that's actively worse than this. So I think I probably give Barra a C out of this. I mean, think about how high we were on what Fever Dreams, and I think in most practical senses, Storm's End's
well,
Maester is
some people were
better than that, right?
Nope, they're both trash. Lannister.
All right. Lay Lannister on us.
We're bouncing over to me then. Okay. Aaron really want great. Huh?
No, I did. I did.
Oh, whoops!
I just read Barra.
He did. Whoops, we're doing
bad.
It the same order.
I just did Barra.
It went Stark.
I
Tyrell.
Probably shouldn't be drinking so much Oktoberfest.
Yeah,
but it's October now. We just won't talk about Oktoberfest actually being in September. Anyway, Lannister. First up, we have the Painted Dogs. It's a non-loyal clansman. 4 cost, 3 strength, military and intrigue icons. Ambush of 4. And challenges action, return Painted Dogs to your hand to choose and stand a clansman character or Tyrion Lannister. And then Walk of Atonement. That's a loyal Lannister event for 2, the 7 trait. And dominance action, discard any amount of power from a character you control. For each power discarded, discard 1 card at random from each opponent's hand and draw 1 card. You know, I'm not going to complain about a little extra action advantage for Lannister in general and Clansmen in particular here. it is a little unfortunate, I think, that it doesn't really mesh well with Clansman Tyrion from the perspective of both abilities need to be returned to hand. So you're not really doubling it up or doing anything super interesting there without a lot of gold to keep ambushing it back into play. But still, I think stand is reasonable even if the targets here are narrow. Walk of Atonement, on the other hand, is one that really gives you a huge kind of Shaga wow factor at first, and then you start reading it and realize it's A, high cost, B, very restricted timing, C, cost me power, let's see, and that's mainly it. But I don't know that the rest of the payoff for that is worth that many costs here. I don't know that it's ever going to be very practical, especially not in the current place of the meta where things are as fast as they are. It's just not practical for me to sacrifice that much power right now. Unless maybe I've specifically got Lions, Cersei to make it neutral, but then like I still got to sit on this in my hand until dominance. If this could be done in like draw or marshalling, then it would be very cool. But right, I mean, if it was a draw phase action, I'd have to figure out how to get it.
If it was in marshalling, it would
or draw. Like if it was... I mean, without the cost of it, like it would be busted in draw. It's saying you drew two cards. I'm gonna chuck two power. Your draw.
That's a little bit too strong. I just feel like I need that in Lannister now. At this point, it still bugs me that really the only viable thing in Lannister has kind of just become rush, and I want to play other things, and right now these cards are not helping other things happen enough. So I actually think I give Lanny a D.
I think you're wrong, Will, about Painted Dogs. I think Aaron's earlier points about Clansmen being too strong or too slow, rather, it's certainly true. But Painted Dogs is a good Clansman card. It does everything you want a Clansman card to do. It has ambush.
It has two icons.
It has two icons. One of them is green. It stands a Clansman like Timmit or Tyrion. And it returns to hand so it can just be ambushed again. So, and it gets around. It's a great Harrenhal target for that reason. It's just generally, I think, a really strong role player in Clansmen. And if Clansmen could solve its speed problems, and if anyone is going to solve it, it's going to be Jesse Carpenter. And he'll keep clogging away and telling us Clansmen is busted for forever. And one day it will be. So I actually think it's like a B, like Pain Dog is a B card. Walk of Atonement is a huge, huge, huge Ned / theme win. Like it does a really good job of capturing a card, the Walk of Atonement. One, it's got great Magali art. And then two, just the way, you know, you take all the power off, of course, Lions, Queen Cersei to discard of cards from your opponent's hand and draw a card. It's extra, you know, if you particularly view it in the context of what we know from the show, it's extra like, you're like, ooh, Danny, this is like a theme, knock it out of the park. And, you know, I actually think the Lannister cards have the best art because also this is another card that Ramon did, and he does our Northeast Championship Tour, New York City, Philadelphia alt arts, including my amazing Noble Cause art that I have for Thornstoberfest. So I can't hate on Painted Dogs. So I would give Lannister like a C+, B minus here. But
I think I think Walk of Atonement has a really solid little home in Lenny. What the hell is the name of that agenda? What's the 7 agenda?
Faith Militant.
I think it has a nice little home in Faith Militant. Like,
where you have surplus power.
Well, you have a surplus of power, but like,
but I mean,
that'd be helpful.
It needs more.
It has one.
I've tried it already. This does not help it. This does not help it.
Yeah. Well, this helps. Like, right? Like, because poor fellows will just have two power. Draw two cards, discard two cards from your opponent's
hand. I mean, if your poor fellows are alive.
Mm-hmm.
Like.
So.
Yeah. I mean.
So, Glazer, it's got to be two, right? You got to go one for one with gold here, right? Yeah. So it has to be minimum two power, right?
But I'll chuck two power and two gold to discard two and draw two. Like, and assuming I can figure out how to play the long game with those Lani decks, I don't think that's bad. I don't think that deck is there yet, but I think it's perfectly solid. I also think this is actually pretty solid. Like, in Europe, I haven't really seen them in America. There's a lot of, like, Lani Wars running a lot of their different draw stuff around. And, like, I think that fits into this deck. Because that deck runs Big Cersei. And, like, but Big Cersei's not the win condition. She's just a big, scary body. Like, it just wants to run all the different minor Lannister draw and keep a lot of tempo pressure. I think this finds a home there. I think being able to say negative two power to Big Cersei, now you draw two, and, like, you get that power right back, is really good in that kind of deck, because that deck's already crushing your hand, doing all this other stuff. So I think it's got two really good homes there. And Painted Dogs is obviously just a fine card. I think it should probably be printed cost three, but God forbid they actually let Lannister have anything above her for the past four cycles. So, I don't know. I'm going to say
I do at least want to throw out here, there's one other home for Walk of Atonement that we have not acknowledged. Aaron, you can go get a drink right now. It does probably belong in some kind of Chela melee deck that just wants to watch the world burn, because it discards from every opponent. So I definitely expect to see people that want to play this in melee to just force every other player to discard their whole hand, which is going to be super annoying. Don't think it'll be a winning strategy for them, but if they just want to come cause chaos.
It also, with Cersei, replaces the power, correct?
Depending on if she's got the three triggers, right. So, but like, if you didn't play Heads on Spikes that turn, and you didn't have Casterly out, you won one entry challenge with Cersei, so you got one power.
I mean, right? Assuming, like, your opponent didn't discard anything themselves.
Sure.
Which, you know, they might be doing. They might be Targ.
I mean, and reserve is a thing that happens. Like, there's, you know, there's ways. All right. Will, did you rate this?
Yeah, I rated Lady early. I'm pretty down on this as a whole, so I think I gave him 50 plus.
Okay. Roy, I believe you're Greyjoy.
I'll do Greyjoy.
Oh, gee, did I set it up so I'm dark? Who knew?
But not your favorite faction. So Iron Victory's crew, which is a non-unique, non-loyal character, red and blue icon, strength 4, Ironborn Raider, no attachments. Reaction, Scott will be happy about that one. Reaction, after Iron Victory's crew enters play, search your deck for a warship location, reveal it and add it to your hand. Put it into play instead. If it is Iron Victory, shuffle your deck. And then we have Refurbished Hulk, which is a 2-cost, loyal, non-unique warship location that has +1 income, +1 initiative. I think both of these cards... All right, first off, Refurbished Hulk is the card Greyjoy desperately has wanted, I don't know, since the core set. It's good economy for Greyjoy in the greediest, most gold-hungry faction in the game. This is like 2-3x in all Greyjoy decks going forward. It's busted with the new Victarion because nothing about it requires it to be standing. So you get your Renown, or you get your Nelta location, or you get whatever the third thing Victarion does. I can't remember. Stand-in?
Stand-up, yeah.
Yeah. You get that just for free. That's, yep. Once this is in play, that you get that at least once around. And of course, again, it solves Greyjoy's economy problems. Mm-hmm. Having played a lot of Drowned God, having recently played a lot of... Greyjoy X. This is a very good card to solve some of Greyjoy's economy problems. Iron Victory's crew. All right, this is where Glazer and I will probably disagree the most. I think this is a very solid card in a Vic-based warship deck. The ability to, like, if you set up like you mulligan, you set up, and you don't have any economy, but you have this in your hand on the first turn. You play this, you get a refurbished Hulk, you have economy. And then later in the game, it can fetch Great Krakens for you. It can fetch all the warships. It can fetch that busted Shadows warship that was in the last cycle. And then if you're hungry for the zero drops, you can play this and the zero drop on the same turn. So I think in a Vic deck, Iron Victory's crew is significantly above curve. And that tutor is really strong, like to get like consistent. So, and it lets you run one of a variety of different warships in your warship deck. So you can run one Great Kraken, one Iron Victory, one of all of these things, and three Iron Victory's crew, because you know at the end of the day, you'll be able to fetch on demand that the warship that you need for that specific situation. And you always have the option of pulling your Hulks if you need economy. And again, Greyjoy, particularly big, expensive, thirsty Greyjoy, is in desperate need of economy. So I think this is like a minus maybe, because Iron Victory's crew isn't just going to go in every Greyjoy deck. Territory for Greyjoy.
So I've been waiting until we got to Greyjoy to make this point, but restricted list plus this new non-limited econ, I think may mean that Fealty is back in the meta in a fairly big way. Being able to get this non-limited econ for one, and then get another econ, often set up your deck for the entire game for economy. It's one of the core principles of the Martell Fealty that Derek topped forward with in DC.
Ford, yep.
Like, it's just that, like, that being able to get an unlimited economy for significantly cheaper means that once you see two economy cards, like, your game starts looking real smooth. I think that might be especially true in Greyjoy because they're expensive and don't have a lot of economy, but a lot of their best stuff is loyal. Refurbished Hulk is phenomenal with Vic. Iron Victory's crew goes in a Vic deck. I'm assuming that warships are going to continue to come with the box. Should warships continue to come with the box, I will revisit Iron Victory's crew. I don't think Victarion is quite good enough right now, given how fast the meta is, how expensive he is, and that you need to get him set up. But he's close. And I think Iron Victory's crew, once we have more warships, will be an important step to getting us there. And Refurbished Hulk obviously is. I wish it had something beyond plus one initiative, because I don't think Greyjoy especially cares about that anymore. But whatever. Beyond that, I think this house is a solid B.
I mean, I'm going to throw out there the whole melee thing again. I think Refurbished Hulk is going to be... It's already very reasonable for the house. Very, very solid for them. I actually sort of, I guess, find myself liking the non-limited locations with just these... just blanket stat boosts almost more than some of the effect ones. I think that initiative boost is going to be really awesome in melee. The Iron Victory's crew, though, I mean, yes, it is more expensive than, say, the Mormont Scout, but that also comes, of course, with more challenge punch and just a better like target base to search for overall, I think. Or at least certainly one that is more likely to expand in interesting ways. So I think the crew is going to be like a really awesome toolboxy tool for Greyjoy. And that's even aside from like kind of the constructed plan builds that you guys are talking about with, say, Victarion or something. And I think that type of search is going to be pretty awesome. I think it's these two cards are definitely things Greyjoy wants. This may be my favorite so far in the pack. I'm going to give Greyjoy an A out of this.
Right. Greyjoy is good. I think we can all generally agree that with this one. So. And again, another art by Ramon.
Right. Drogon is a Targaryen, loyal, unique dragon. 6 cost, 6 strength, military icon. Ambush 6 with no attachment. And the stupidest text I've seen in ages. After you win a challenge in which Drogon is attacking, choose a character controlled by the losing opponent. Until the end of the phase, the character gets -4 strength and is killed if his strength. In Daz next bit, is a Targ loyal event. Cost of no cost, sorry, you can only play it in Shadows. It has Shadow 3. This somehow has even dumber text than Druid. When the challenge phase ends, stand each character. Following this phase, there's an additional challenge phase, max one per round. This next pit means it's pretty easiest Targ to get off 8 claim military. And Drogon makes it easy to target kill two things. That seems a little bit busted.
Pushing the aggro real hard, huh?
I mean, Drogon is real strong, but at least he's only one icon. You nail him, you're taking care of it. Lots of stuff like that, right? That's next pit. It's just freaking absurd. Like, I don't know what can stand up to Daznak's pit, but I'm curious to find out because it's completely insane, like completely insane. Like even playing like 6-1-1, sorry, Support of the Faith, or what's the one that lets you barring the gates, or King Plot doesn't stop this. It's just completely insane how strong and easy to use this is, especially since they, for some reason, didn't restrict Histar.
Supporting the Faith does stop this.
Not if you have Histar.
Because you lose your gold. Histar, that's true. Yeah, it's extremely powerful. It's probably the first... It's a 5 gold event. And it's probably the first that really overcosted event that feels worth it. I feel like it could have been 6. And in some cases, it might have been playable because of its ridiculous stand each character. I think it pushes Hand's Judgment to the meta. So just to let our listeners know, this is in the FAQ, but just to make it clear, the printed cost of this event is null. So it's 0. So it just a free Hand's Judgment cancel, of course, which pushes a Targ player that's playing this to be playing Hand's Judgment. But it's incredibly powerful effect. It's going to become even more powerful when Sea of Blood comes out. But I would definitely expect to see Targ Rush and Targ Aggro both playing this card at least 2x. But I could definitely see Targ Aggro decks are running at 3. Drogon is just a more consistent version of the Mountain. So if you're someone like myself who did not like the Mountain, Drogon is an even more annoying version of that. At least he has to be attacking now too. So let's be fair. The Mountain could do it on defense. But right.
I mean,
well, and it was a crap.
You do know what you're doing.
The control is makes it stronger.
You know what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's
why I say more consistent. Because almost every stronger. Good character in the game is 4 strength.
Yeah.
Yes. I feel like a lot lately have been pushing above that, but definitely from the first like 2 years or so of the game, 4 was very.
But it's easy to get that extra -1 right for Targaryen, particularly when you have Dany.
You have Dany. Marine, not Marine.
Blood. Yes,
you have
that Blood.
You have the -4 location. You have the other -2 location. You have the stupid 2-for-3 bestow guy that can just randomly take one off whenever the hell it wants
on any number of characters. So
you have options.
Yes, I definitely agree. And of course, the ability to play him for 3 with Histar is nuts.
I mean, then stand up and do it again.
I love you. Yep.
I really wish these two cards weren't printed.
Right. Dag's next pit is free with Histar, right?
I mean, if you want to discard 2 cards, free entirely.
Discard one in Marshalling to play Drogon.
Put it in Shadows. Yeah, to put Dazneck into Shadows, discard to take it out.
Yep. extremely strong.
It does.
Well, right.
It's Marshall.
Put in yeah.
Are you sure?
Stuff, yeah.
Right. It's Marshall.
Yes.
What bring out of? Yeah.
It's Marshall.
So,
yeah.
So
yeah.
I
called him up to look at.
So two gold. I mean, two gold for this event is busted.
But I mean, still, you're getting down to
two golds and a card is pretty busted as well.
Still huge.
It's just really strong and incredibly abusable.
I mean,
beautiful art.
So abusable. I know. Here I am bringing up melee again here, but like, what does this card do to melee? I can very much see decks like, say, the one Tommy won U.S. Nationals with, the Tyrell dragon with Queen's Guards and stuff, that do something silly with this and like plow out a win
and joust. In joust,
it's
turn one
gonna
is
be possible.
Like you stick this card
maybe.
In
I'm
the deck that
say
Sandy's
maybe.
Been
I
playing. The one Rich, won UK Nats with, and like, why would you not just take a second challenge phase and automatically win the game in a crossing?
Right, and you have to remember that cards with limits reset because it's a new challenges phase. It's not like rewind it back to the beginning of the challenges phase.
Yeah.
So that means anything that's like a challenges action that's limit once per phase, since it's a new one.
You can use his start challenges to make Drogon ambush for three. And then at the end of challenges. Oh, no, I guess you couldn't. It's because this is when the challenge phase ends.
No, what you could do is you could do all your challenges and then discard with his dart to bring this out, and then discard with his dart to bring Drogon out, or one of the other dragons.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, or Aegon,
this
yeah.
Well, that is actually a good point, that the Targ does have a couple of these Shadows cards, but there is going to be some actual kind of decision-making back and forth on, well, is that going to be Aegon, or is that going
to
be in Daznak's pit?
The Tyrell card that we discussed earlier is a pretty good answer to Daznak's pit. You win a power challenge, you return the pit to your opponent's hand. That's a big tempo hit for them. And so it's just, you're going to have, like, my advice is run Hand's Judgment right now. It's good against the suite of Targ burn spells. It's good against this card. Like, it's a huge tempo swing if Daznak's pit gets canceled. So you want opportunities to do that. Martell's about to get an ability to run one as well. That's really strong.
Well, Martell also has the two-cost event that'll already do it. Essay.
Yep. Martell will have three access to three.
Well, right.
So, what ways to cancel it, which is good for Martell.
If only King Plot can kill them dead.
All right. S, by the way.
So,
S.
Obviously, S.
Did we all...
Who wants to read Martell?
I agree. Does that send it to me? I think that sends it to me, doesn't it? Okay. First up, we have Maester Miles. He's a unique non-loyal Maester, of course. 2 cost, 2 strength, intrigue icon. Challenges action, kneel Maester Miles to choose a character with printing cost equal to or lower than the number of plot cards in your use pile. Until the end of the phase, that character loses a challenge icon of your choice, and he calls it thinking. This is a 0-cost loyal event. Interrupt: when the effects of an opponent's non-agenda, non-plot triggered ability would initiate, cancel those effects unless that player pays 1 gold. Well, I'll start with Maester Miles. I feel like icon control has very much kind of taken a back seat for Martell lately, but he's intriguing. If you're going to try and tinker with that angle of control, I think he's a very kind of low opportunity cost 1x inclusion there that hopefully you draw turn, say, 4 when he starts being able to hit reasonable stuff. Otherwise, you're looking at putting him in with some of the used plots, shenanigans, and I don't know, the two of those mesh as well as I would like. On the other hand, he calls it thinking, looks amazing. This plot is free. Now, I mean, sure, income has gone up across the board over the last two cycles. Like, everybody has more money than they used to. But we're also getting a lot more expensive stuff, which means, you know, if your opponent commits to something, I think there's very good chances that that you can hit something when they can't pay for it. So, and this hits such a wide range. This is, what, the widest range of any cancel we've got right now?
Correct. Because it's important to say, I just double-checked this. Literally in second Martell edition, anything with a bold face type is a triggered ability. So it's not just reactions, like for first edition people. Yes. It's not just reactions that this cancels. It's anything printed on a non-agenda, non-plot card that we can cancel.
It's, I mean...
Yep. There you go. So, character location.
And events. And
it basically means...
throw another card type at us?
Against Martell, you have to
play... Oh, and event stuff. Yep.
With a negative, with a negative one gold.
Oh.
You have to play what? That was a little quiet, Aaron.
And people aren't going to be used to that for a while.
Yeah, exactly. You have to set on that with them. Which is...
Well, I mean, but it also gives Martell huge amounts of interaction in phases like taxation, plot, that, like, against Mace. Like, think, like, I mean, he's not as much of a big deal at the moment, but it would be great for Martell when Mace was...
Where he was like, all right, I'm going to kneel my faction card and put something in Shadows and remove something with Mace. And I was like, no, you're not. Set up a march on Mace. In a different game, he went to I had a Varus out and we had a Nightmares in hand, and he went to return his what's that two cost thing called? The Scheming Septon to hand to get two gold, and I canceled that. And it's just like, now you don't have gold, and I Varused your board, and now more. Mm-hmm. And like, there's so many like corner uses where you're just like, I can totally swing the game by timing this properly.
It's also really good disruption against like event heavy aggro decks, at least until we get Sea of Blood, where like they need to save the two gold to do something, like put to the sword or Jacaris. So you can cancel something that they don't want canceled. And they're like, okay, do I let my Hisdar trigger that I needed here be canceled? And now I can get my Jacaris off, but I can't marshal this thing I was planning to marshal. So it creates huge amounts of decision paralysis for your opponent. And, you know, if your opponent is saving for that put to the sword, saving for that Jacaris, obviously, you know, making Jacaris's cost two is huge. Letting the Jacaris something, but then they can't Astapor it really raises Martell control a lot. I think more than what's the other one? Someone Always Tells did end up
someone
doing.
Someone Always Tells does something entirely different. Different deck.
Right. Well, I feel like I felt when it was printed that Someone Always Tells would be a control card. It's not. But this, I believe, is. I mean, it's also going to be good in aggro. It's also going to be, you know, any kind of cheap cancel is good in aggro. But I think it definitely will be good in control.
I overall agree.
Mr. Miles is pretty bad.
I think Mr. Miles is completely useless. Yeah. That he kneels himself on top of being so restricted is just like, why even bother? I think he's at best. Like
Martell just has better cards.
I'm like trying to
right?
be generous.
Like, they
do.
Mara has better cards than this, let alone Martell.
I mean, like, Martell has better icon control cards. Ooh, like, maybe when some of the first cycle stuff rotates, you look a little bit more at Maester Miles, but just like.
No, you won't. He nails himself. He's too. If he was one cost, we'd start. But, like, after three plots, I can take away a three costers intrigue icon. He's kind of dumb. by kneeling my own dude. Like, it, he's an F. He calls it thinking as an A, so I'm going to give the house a B minus.
Seems reasonable. I think it might just be an A minus. He calls it thinking that good.
I think I'm going to go ahead and give him an A. Yeah. Yeah. I'm with Roy. I give the edge a little more weighting on he calls it.
So old right. Bill Bone is a unique neutral character, 2-cost shadows crested, green and red icons, 2 strength. He's a mercenary, shadow 1, reaction after old Bill Bone, there we go, comes out of shadows, kneel each opponent's faction card. He's fine.
I think he's great.
4 gold.
I mean,
three.
I think for three, shadow he's totally fine. If you're running Shadow's deck, I don't think I'd run him.
Yeah.
But in the Shadow's deck, yeah, I play him.
I mean, maybe. Like, okay, so what? Let's take a look then. What are the effects you're really Maze. Looking to hit with him? Like, because if you're just running him in a Shadow's deck for this, just for the stats, like
Mace, Iron Bank, Secret Schemes.
That's pretty good.
Fealty in general. Like,
Fealty in general. All right. Reigns mm-hmm. in general.
Depends on if Fealty or Reigns really become forces in meta.
Shadow Black.
Yeah, that one's restricted.
Shadow Black Lane.
Shadow Black is probably the one you're selling me on the most.
Wait 2 weeks for Shadow Black to be completely insane. Doesn't Sea of Blood require a faction, Neil? Like,
for the search,
literally
I
in a couple of weeks. Yeah. Lannister has a couple, but I don't remember what they're.
The search event, the zero cost. The one that goes.
The zero cost search event.
Well, and the X cost.
Yeah, but that's bad.
Doesn't see play.
Yeah, the zero cost search is the big one. Martell has another, because there was one.
It's the gold.
Oh, the gold. The gold one, which is really good in wards.
It's pretty brutal in standing. Like, bringing old Bill Bone out in standing is pretty brutal. Against a lot of against some decks.
I mean, at worst case, you just have a 2-for-2 chud. Like, I'm playing Greyjoy, and I know I don't care about the fact.
Oh, but it turns off Seastone Chair.
Oh yeah, turn off Seastone.
Oh,
that's pretty solid.
Yeah, it does. There you go.
Like, there's just little things all around. It shuts off Solis.
It does.
Indeed.
Shuts off Harrenhal. Stark. These are solid cards.
Yeah.
Like, I would happily run one of these if I'm playing that.
There's definitely some blowout potential here.
I think he'll have a hard time fitting in most decks that aren't Shadows decks. Like, unless you are really sure that you're running up against somebody that you know need that blowout matchup. Like, It's a nifty, cutesy, sideboard-ish sort of effect. But I just think it gets squeezed out for space in 90% of decks.
Yeah. Again, I said Shadow deck specifically for a reason. Yeah. We're not fitting them anywhere else, but if I want Shadows cards, being able to get a random amount of both.
He'll just be in Shadows decks, though. He'll be in Brotherhood decks. He'll be in Free Folk. He'll be...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I mean free folk is pretty good against, like, you know, just.
Oh, he shuts off Free Folk.
Yep, he does.
He shuts off Free Folk and Brotherhood. Yeah, okay, he should just be in a lot of decks. Yeah, whatever. That's what you need to stabilize.
Yeah, in some. But I mean, like, in stabilizing with some of those, like, say, against Free Folk, like, does it do you much good if you draw him turn 4 in a lot of those matchups? I mean,
if you survive to turn
probably
4, you're probably in solid position anyway, right?
Right. So that means his usefulness is down if you draw him that late, because you've already survived that long. So the other option is including more copies of him to ensure you get him early, but, like, is this character in this effect that important?
Against Free Folk, yeah.
It is very, like, good. 100%. Like, a turn 1 against Free Folk... It's basically it turns Free Folk into a shitty deck.
I mean, yes, that's true. But if that is your, like, criteria, are you running 3x Old Bill Bone in most of your decks to account for the Free Folk matchup?
If my deck beats everything but Free Folk, yes. If not.
So back to being kind of
Silver Bullet-y.
Yeah, but I think that there's a lot.
I think he's at the point of Aaron's metaphor is good. There's enough werewolves in the meta that you would look at a deck list and see one Old Bill Bone and be like, okay, I can see that. And there's some decks that like, you know, against some decks, let's pick like against Stark. You're not super happy to see him in your mulligan hand, but he's still a two drop. With decent icons that can block a challenge and die to claim when you don't need the faction card Neil. But you will mulligan for him against Free Folk. You will mulligan for him against a mace deck. But a mace deck, it's actually good when you draw him turn four, right? Because you're like it's just, he's a flexible card. He's a flexible Silver Bullet enough. And Danny printed him at a point where he's closer to maybe Nightmares. Is a Silver Bullet where, you know, there's some matchups where Nightmares is fine, but you're never like, oh, I desperately need to see my Nightmares in this matchup. Then like Burn the Dead or whatever that thing that kills all or removes all non-unique characters from the dead pile. You know, I feel like he's very Silver Bullet-y, but he's a pushed Silver Bullet. So he's definitely someone you'll probably expect to see in our aggro meta as a 1x. If he wasn't unique, he'd be much better, but he'd probably be busted. So I give him a B. Okay. B-.
Probably. So
B,
what B, rating?
Yeah, B- is where I was.
B-? Okay. That's fair. I think I'm probably giving him an E overall. I think... he's more firmly
to make Wama in that
aspect. Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, we hadn't given one yet.
Will,
this pack.
Do you want to read the card that's going to break your form, your favorite format in the form of collusion?
sure. How about the Inn at the Crossroads? This is a unique 2-cost neutral location with the Riverland Strait. Shadow 1, dominance action. Kneel the Inn at the Crossroads to draw 3 cards and choose an opponent. Give control of the Inn at the Crossroads to that player. Okay, I'll just start off with, here's another one that has shadows for no particular reason. It doesn't really provide great bluffing cover for anything else because I'm just taxing myself to be able to use the Inn, but okay, whatever. Let's look at the fact that I get to give it to any opponent. And in Melee, when I have multiple opponents, now I can make deals. Now that opponent and I can just trade the Inn at the Crossroads back and forth to each other.
I'm sending you my Inn every time, Will, when we're at a table.
Yeah. Some unscrupulous players, as Roy is intimating at, could potentially make those deals before the game even starts. And that's going to be very, very awkward. I like seeing a lot of cards lately that do kind of have some cross application in Melee, but this being so straight up repeatable, I think puts it in a different realm in Melee than something like what's the draw two event.
Dragon's Tail,
yeah.
Yes, Dragon's Tail. Yeah. It is much harder to build a, you know, game-long strategy of that. Maybe not much harder, but the Inn at the Crossroads does definitely make it very, very easy. In Joust, I don't think I want to give it to my
opponent,
right? I mean, yeah. Yeah, if I just need to draw those three to get to something... Or maybe I'm playing Greyjoy, I want to give this to them and then blow it up on my next marshalling with a newly made lord or something, then I could see that happening. But
in many ways this is an E card, because some combo deck will play it at some point.
It's a super F. This card is trash.
Super F. Aaron's going to start giving out.
All right, Glazer.
You so bad.
You want to talk? Why don't you talk about a good card then? By friend of the show.
A Pinch of Powder, which is Lucas Reed, 2008, back when only Bill still played. Championship design. Cost, bleh. You can only put it into Shadows, but it's Shadows 1. Item and weapon. After you win an intrigue or power challenge by 5 or more strength as the attacking player, return an attached character to its owner's hand. This is the best Lannister card since the cycle 1.
Cycle 2. One. Since the Lannister box. Since the Lannister box.
Maybe cycle 2.
I don't think that has a home anywhere else.
You don't think it goes to Martell?
I don't think Martell can win by 5 consistently enough at attrition, and I don't think Martell non-attrition wants this. This just doesn't push their game forward.
I think some kind of Tyrell Shadows deck.
Yeah, real deck. Also got a nice.
What about Barra? Because it triggers on power.
Oh yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe.
He gives Barra trigger on power removal.
might actually give it a decent home in Rayjoy too.
I think actually it gives Barra removal that actually lines up well against like Targaryen, a go first Barra deck that's running Bob. And you can just
just nail throw Drogo back to hand time after time.
Mm-hmm. Or Dany, right? A returning to hand is a very powerful effect because of its interaction that only saves protect you.
Only dupes protect you.
Dupes, right? Dupes, excuse me. Are the only save that protects you?
Yeah.
I think it's really good. I think it's still, even given all that, mostly a landing card, maybe occasionally a Barra. I don't like. It might go in that Tyrell Wolf. Right, like they had enough win by five stuff.
Oh yeah.
Pull it off. But like Martell doesn't have the strength to win by five consistently. Unless they're running a deck that wants to win by five in order to trigger Doran's game. At which point I don't care what you have on the board. So I think it's a solid B card. I think it's really good because it's repeatable. And a weapon. It's pretty. Ooh. Does this go in Nice Watch Reigns?
It could. It could easily go Nice Watch Reigns.
That seems like a good home.
Because it triggers on power challenges, which is easy for Nice Watch to win. And
intrigue.
Well, now that new John, or not even new, middle John, Box John, is much safer.
Oh, God. Box John is safe again. Great.
So
I needed that in my life.
So. Yeah, I mean, the fact that it's non-terminal and non-unique is
silly.
Pretty silly. I mean, I guess it's a reward to Lucas because, or to Luke, because his first edition version of this card was garbage.
I mean, I wish Martell could make it work. Because, like, Martell would be really cool making this cost one to go into Shadows. If Martell gets that Shadow deck going, I could see it work. And Martell Lion's not far off. You know, King Plot being what it is. It's not far off besides that.
And it empowers that Lannister card, right? Or Lannister Shadows deck.
Yeah. It's good in Lanny. It's definitely good in Lanny. It's a Lanny card, 100%. But it's got a few other homes.
Tyrell, with if you can find a deck that wants Queen of Thorns.
Yeah.
I tried to make that argument. Aaron shot it down.
Tyrell Shadows.
Well, but because the triggers work.
I mean, if running that Queen of Thorns,
she's got stealth, make it easier to win by five. Her trigger brings a card out of Shadows. You bring this out, you trigger it on the same challenge.
I still don't think there's enough Shadows cards in Tyrell. Maybe one day.
I mean, I agree. I don't think that there's enough. I don't think this pushes you to a critical mass yet. Maybe there's like a Tyrell Lion at some point.
This and old Bill Bones, certainly.
Yeah.
And the zero cost.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know. I still think it's a B. Anyone else want to rate it?
I mean,
I think it's like a B+, A-, actually. I think. We'll be surprised where this card shows up. It's super powerful. Like, you just got to figure out how to get it off. And the fact that it's the first win by five removal on the power challenge is a huge deal.
Okay. What's the last card?
Double Dealing is a neutral plot, 5 gold, 7 initiative, 1 claim, 6 reserve. It is a scheme, and it is basically Varys' riddle for non-triggered plots. Plot action. Choose a plot card in an opponent's use pile. Double Dealing gains that plot's printed text box, except for traits, until you reveal a new plot card. So, limit once per round. So the way this works...
No, wait, time out. It's the Tyrell thing. It's the Tyrell plot.
No, it can never hit when revealed. Right, exactly.
If the Tyrell one could never hit when revealed, a Double deal.
Yes, it does. It hits counting. It only hits when revealed.
So it's the non-when revealed version. Riddle only works on when revealed. Correct. Double Dealing never works on when revealed.
Right.
So
that's
it's
why
the version. It's the non. It's go. Got nothing to do with Riddle. It's the version of the Tyrell plot. The non-real version of the Tyrell plot. Get it?
No, but that's fine. I shouldn't have brought up. I apologize for bringing Varys' Riddle. Let me provide some examples of plots that this deck can this can hit. It can hit Breaking Ties. It can hit all of the faction plots. It can hit anything with passive text. So that would be another thing like King Plot. It can hit Fortified Position.
Bar in the Gates,
that's the one I was trying to remember. Yeah, Bar in the Gates, Noble Cause.
But
it can never hit when revealed. So that's the important thing. So that's where my comparison was. While Varys' Riddle and the Tyrell plot can only hit when revealed, this can never hit when revealed, making it the opposite of those.
Right.
But
there's still a lot of good tools.
There are, and more decks are running those kind of passive ability plots. So it's fine. You can create an infinite loop with Double Dealing. No, I'm just joking. You can't actually, but
I mean, it's got some pretty absurdly like pumped stats, doesn't it? Compared to the sort of thing we've seen in the past.
I mean,
it's the same reason, though, that
so does the Tyrell and so does Varys' Riddle, because if you miss with this, like, it's garbage. And Danny wants you to play with it.
And you're so much more likely to miss with this.
Yeah.
Like, I think without Breaking Ties, there's not a lot you want to hit. Like, how often do you want to hit an opponent's King plot?
I mean, running 2 King plots in your deck isn't horrible.
But you're not running 2 King plots. Like, you have to, I mean, I guess
yours
you can run King plot and run your opponents, but if your opponent's running it, odds are they're playing for it right now. You don't want a second. Like, I don't know what you're trying to hit with this.
It does hit
common enough.
First Snow, which is kind of cool. It hits Supporting the Faith.
Yeah. I mean, it's barring. There's a lot of things that it hits that I don't think you can count on it hitting or your deck wanting it to hit.
Yeah, you have to have a very specific deck and find a, like, there has to be a non-when revealed plot that's ubiquitous in the meta that you want to be able...
That didn't just get restricted.
Didn't just get restricted, and that you want to be... that it's better for you to wait for your opponent to play that plot then you can go and do a better statted version of it. And I feel like that's just not a space that's hugely explorable outside of Wars to Come. And then Wars to Come just recently got restricted, particularly got restricted from one of the best non-when revealed plots. So I think this is maybe a Rookery card at most. It's like a D.
Here we go, guys. I figured it out. You copy your opponent's Annals of Castle Black.
There you go. I mean, that's not necessarily a horrible thing to do.
Littlefinger's meddling, right?
Littlefinger's middle lane.
Yeah.
But like, no, but like legitimately against an Annals deck that didn't succeed in going off on its Annals turn, sometimes you can screw them by copying their Annals when they don't want you to.
Yeah, I don't think those decks.
No, I don't think those decks exist either, but it's something.
So, I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting plot. I wish, because it's a scheme, I really wish that it interacted with slash was playable with Reigns of Castamere.
It is. Oh, it's but not, it's, because it's a plot action, not just an action, right?
I mean,
or one reveal.
Yeah, I mean, you could play it. You just couldn't use its ability if you do it.
That's right, yeah. That's weird.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Otherwise, yeah, I think it's at least an interesting card.
It's also missable, which is another thing. So you can go to plots, your opponent does their when revealed, and then you can then they you could ask them, like, any actions? And if they say no, then you're like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can't miss when revealed, right? Which is sometimes a headache when players do, when you're a judge. But this is 100% missable. Right. It's weird that it's not a one reveal. There's probably some rules reason. Or they didn't want it interacting with...
I guess so it doesn't do something funky with another...
With Reigns, maybe, in some way. They just, like, they don't want this effect.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's probably the big one, is that it shuts off the Reigns ability.
It's just weird. Anyway, it's a D.
Yeah.
To me.
I think it's a C minus. Its stats are good enough to blow up from a D, but I'm assuming I'm never going to play it. Unless you guys aren't going to talk about melee with this obvious fucking melee card, huh?
Depends on the. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of choices around, but a lot of those ones that you do want to copy that we've listed off here just
Illusion.
Now, like, don't see much play in melee, but yeah.
Collusion,
I suppose, could be a possibility.
Oh.
You and an opponent could figure out a way to set up the same four plot effects for four turns in a row with this.
4-9-1. Grab an extra power.
Oh, yeah. Clash of Kings? Yeah, and some people do nab that. A lot of times they try and save that for their winning turn, but if folks can band together and stop them, it might be reasonable for you. And, I mean, you're basically never using all seven plots in melee anyway. Having something like this with good income and initiative in your back pocket is not a bad idea if the situation comes up.
Let's talk final thoughts on the pack.
You did.
It's not as ridiculous as the last one, but it's still got probably the two strongest cards in the cycle.
It's a real strong cycle, but it's close. I think, Indaz next pit should probably be restricted immediately.
It will be when it wins Worlds.
It's not winning Worlds right now, unless Nico shows up with some weird shit. Because it's going to be Targ Cohort something, right?
It's perfectly fine in Targ Cohort.
Nico will play Targ Cohort Banner. Something, and then he'll run his Desnex gain 8,000 power in a turn.
So, yeah, strong. It's a good pack, good cycle, very powerful.
So far, so good. Props and slops.
I'm gonna prop Brooklyn 99. That shows. I expect.
Yeah, what's that on now?
Hulu.
But I also want a prop that it has the best. Like, I don't know what they're called at the beginning. They're at the end of the show. They're stingers. Right before the credit, little jokes. But there's a separate word for the ones that are right at the beginning, like pre-credits. And I don't remember what they.
Oh,
me too. And I my brain all day. I've tried to think of it, but like, it's the only show in history that the ones at the beginning and end actively make me laugh out loud too consistently. The characters are so smart and well defined that I'm constantly cracking up for it.
Awesome. I need to check.
Good job. I could have done that, but I didn't. Good place to back.
Oh, yeah.
I'm still behind.
I need to watch the premiere episode.
It was fine. It wasn't great. It was mostly set up. Like, it was getting
the ducks in a row. It takes them a while to set their stuff up. They like those long
I have nothing but faith stuff. In that show. It's fine.
Cool. Well, thinking of new seasons of stuff, I'm going to throw out, I think, it pains me to say this, but I think I'm going to throw out a slop to episode one of Stranger Things 2. Or Stranger Things, gosh, sorry. Life is Strange, season 2. I knew they couldn't keep just exactly the same formula as the first one, but the formula they've got at the moment, either I think is just a worse premise, or at least is timed poorly, paced poorly. I'm trying not to give out spoilers here, but I'll say there's a very big thing that happens early on that radically changes the scope of where I think the story is going and what you're actually doing. And I think that it would have made way more sense to have been at least in episode two, at least maybe the end of this episode, but I think would have been better to have been pushed as like a big cliffhanger in episode two or something like that. So I think their pacing's a little bit off, and losing the time travel mechanic really is kind of a bummer that really gave it an interesting feel. So we'll see. I'm still going to play it and see where it goes, but it is not as strong of an opening as the first year.
I want to prop everybody who is going to be coming to Thrones Toberfest. I think I might have maybe one more episode that I'll be on between now and then. I'm very excited. I purchased all the prize support for it recently, and it felt very real at that moment. I'm very excited. I also want to throw out there that we also have final details for Red Saturday 2018, which is our first Northeast Championship. Aaron Glazer is a former Red Saturday champion himself, so I guess he gets backdated into being a former Northeast champion. It's going to be amazing. We are very excited. We have Mike Lamsick and I are working on some cool projects to sort of push more people to want to come. We move into a new location, New Brand Gaming in Brooklyn this year, which will hopefully solve some of the problems that people have had with some of our tournaments in the past in New York City. So if that was one of the reasons why you weren't considering attending Red Saturday over Thanksgiving weekend, please reconsider. Tickets are available now online. We have about a 50-ish person cap. So please buy your tickets sooner rather than later if you're interested. We will have to, once we reach roughly 50 people, turn people away at the door. So I would rather you just purchase your tickets through our sweet online system sooner rather than later. It also makes it easier for us to purchase prize support because we get your money up front. Come to Red Saturday. It's going to be amazing. We've got so much planned. We have some awesome announcements for next year's Northeast Championship Tour that I think people are going to be really excited about. We're going to be inducting our first class into the Northeast Hall of Fame. We're going to be having an amazing joust tournament. Aaron is going to find a place to do karaoke. There's going to be just some amazing things that are going to be happening. Red Saturday is probably one of the most magical days in Thrones. Buzz from Sweden is coming. Stephen Ebrie is coming. Because Sandy Yeah, he lost a bet to Sandy. Like, it's going to be a big national and international event. I'm just really excited for Red Saturday. So you should come to that. You should follow Throwingtoberfest if you can't make it out. Will, I'm sure, really admired Mike's Mealy house cards that he made.
Title, not
title. Yeah, so.
Yeah. They were titles, but still, they were great.
Yep, I'm just really excited for the back half of the year's tournaments between now and November.
I want to slop the restricted list because you had one job, FFG. And if you guys don't have anything else, I have another prop.
Go for it.
I want a prop, How to Invent Everything by Ryan North. I know Roy doesn't like him, but Roy is wrong. The book is phenomenally well researched. It's ridiculously interesting, and it's basically like in the guise of like a manual for a stranded time traveler who wants to jumpstart civilization. A complete overview of every new technology, from linguistics to just every invention, like, and how it changed humanity and how it was useful and why it was useful. And like when you would want it, when it was became necessary, and why it became necessary, and how it took us so long to come up with it, and it's written with a lot of like dry humor. It's completely fantastic. I can't recommend it highly enough.
I want to prop my fiance, who it was her birthday this past weekend, and we had a really nice weekend. It was great. We did do history things. That's
just her thing.
Just her thing. I'm boring. I guess I want to prop the Guilds of Ravnica pre-release. The pack's really cool. I want to slop the packs I opened for my sealed pool, which I was playing Selesnya, and I got a really solid pre-seeded pack, and then proceeded to open a bunch of mythics that had nothing to do with the rest of my pool. But other than that, I had a good time.
I did not pre-release, but I have Saturday, recently played a couple games of board game Scythe, finally, which people really hyped up, and I think it really, really paid off, or like met that hype. I really, really enjoyed it. May have had something to do with the fact that I won both games, and since those were my first two, and I won them in a row on the same day, I think I'm pretty much done and may never play Scythe again, so I can kind of maintain that perfect record, but still, the game's really, really cool.
Oh, Roy's throwing things. That sounds like it must be.
I am throwing things, which puts us in the danger zone.
That definitely closes this chapter of the White Book.